Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hello and welcome to the AI Business Podcast. I'm Ben Wodecki and I'm very pleased to be joined by Elliot Young, who is the CTO of Dell Technologies. Elliot, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks, Ben. Nice to see you again. How have you been?
Been okay. I sound a bit nasally, so apologies on that front. But yeah, we're going to have some fun regardless. Elliot, we're talking about multi-cloud and AI. Bit of an interesting topic given, you know, its relevancies to kind of companies building out applications and such and, you know, approaches. But we'll start very simply. Just tell us what you do at Dell. What's your role entail?
Well, at Dell, I am the CTO for the core division within Dell for Europe, Middle East and Africa. And what that means in practice is really forming bridges and close relationships with key board level customers. And what we're doing there is looking for ways to optimize their existing IT and look forward to what kind of strategy do they need to constantly evolve and adapt to be able to take advantage of all the great new technologies that they can get through working directly with a manufacturer like Dell.
So multi-cloud fits in terms of a way that they could potentially optimize. Mm-hmm. Talk us through how it fits into AI.
Well, I think there are a couple of different ways to look at this. You know, multi-cloud starts out by thinking about what kind of operations or IT approaches do you have on-premise where you already built up this key capabilities in certain areas with key skills behind it, and now you want to leverage those when you have that capability in a multi-cloud or in a partner's cloud or that kind of approach. And we call that ground to cloud. And it's really the idea that you can host an AI-optimized workload on a solution like PowerFlex, for example, and have that same capability running on-premise or in Azure or in AWS and have seamless access to the data and a simple way, one control plane to manage it all. So that would be the first part. And the second part would be to say, well, are there capabilities that you want to have in a public cloud, which you can then bring to a different location, which could be on-premise or to a partner site? And that's the kind of cloud to ground approach where you may say, well, actually, on a Monday, I'll configure this node in a data center to be a bare metal node. But on a Tuesday, I actually want to bring some capability from Azure down onto that node, and I'll reconfigure the node dynamically to make it an Azure node. And therefore, perhaps I could run a vector database on there and use that vector database to attach to my local storage and connect that on the other side to an AI that's running in Azure. So that's the cloud to ground approach. And then we look at what can we do to optimize the usage of data between multiple clouds. So you may have this kind of federated approach where as soon as you write the data into one cloud like Azure, it instantly pops up in AWS. And then you can access that data in any way you want to without having the overhead of copying it between clouds or suddenly getting a huge charge from your cloud provider because you move some data from one place to the other. So these are the kind of things that we're looking at. What's the optimum solution to do that? And surprisingly, it changes quite frequently. And certainly with the adoption of generative AI, I mean, the changes that are happening so quickly, it's just it's a full-time job keeping up to date with all the latest changes in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to describe my life in general there. I mean, I struggle. Elliot, I think I wanted to look at use cases on this because I was thinking off air around, you know, where what might benefit a business in terms of multi-cloud approach, you know, what kind of uses. I was thinking maybe like large warehouse maintenance in terms of if you've got a huge site, bigger sites, but yeah. I don't know, talk us through the use cases you think would kind of benefit from utilizing, say, a multi-cloud approach to AI.
I suppose it depends what kind of AI we're talking about. So sure. Companies have been doing machine learning for a number of years, but are they doing that on-premise or in a public cloud? And what have they learned from that? If we take the example of machine learning to start off with, there is a clear use case to separate training of a machine learning environment to inferencing. And a typical design pattern that I see is where organizations want to do their training somewhere close to where the data is, where you have this kind of data gravity effect. But then they say, now I've read the same data over and over again, because you have to do that multiple times to create your machine learning model. Once that's been done, you say, well, now I'm going to create that as an inferencing container. And with that container, I might choose to put that close to whatever's going to consume the output from machine learning. So I might take the container and run it in Azure, or I might take the container and run it in an edge gateway in a factory somewhere. Or I might put it at a partner's infrastructure because I want to have access to what they can deliver. So I think that is a great use case for thinking about how do you separate the different components from machine learning. But then when you get to generative AI, you know, generative AI infrastructure is very different to typical machine learning infrastructure. And in those kind of cases, you're taking conscious decisions on where is the best use of things like GPU cycles or CPU cycles, where in fact, do you want to use one or the other? In machine learning, it's typical you'll have a catalogue of capabilities or models, and you can run those either on CPUs or GPUs. Where generative AI is way more common to have a GPU accelerated approach. And in that case, you're thinking, well, where do I really want to run those kind of solutions? Do I want to be paying for every second of GPU and in some ways have a kind of tax on every time I use generative AI? Or do I want to have the flexibility to use as much or as little as I want and have some kind of dedicated infrastructure just for me? So I think that these are some of the considerations that people are thinking about with different types of AI.
I'd like to just caveat, does that include like the security considerations? Does that differ over the different types of AI you're using as well? Because that's a big thing right now. Everyone's trying to secure their own, what they're using.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with... Well, let's take those two examples again of sure. Machine learning versus generative AI. With machine learning, if you want to do your training in a public cloud or using one of the various as a service offerings, you absolutely have to do that. What you're referring to, you have to think about, how am I going to anonymize the data before I put it into that cloud service, or how am I going to change it to reference keys as opposed to, you know, actual financial transactions. So there's some kind of ETL that needs to happen, some kind of scrubbing. You then got the concern of, well, now I've actually got to copy that much data. So what's the implication of copying it in terms of performance and risk and security? And then when it gets to that final destination, you've suddenly invalidated, in many cases, your opportunity to do compression or dedupe, because you have to use whatever that provider is hosting for you. So there are pros and cons of this, which certainly come into the security view. I think on the generative AI side, one thing that people are finding as they're implementing these is that if you're not careful, it's really, really easy to create an escalation of privilege or to bypass things like role-based access control. And that's because it's so easy to hook up a large language model to your own data via an index or a vector database, that as soon as the AI has got access to it, all of a sudden it's an expert on everything that's in that data set. And then you start thinking about, well, hold on a second, do I want the cloud service provider to also maybe have access to that in some way? Hopefully they won't have access, but maybe. What about controlling what users have access to things? We had a customer came to us actually yesterday in a meeting and said that they had pointed a large language model at their intranet, and they hadn't realized that people had created these kind of private websites, which were privacy by obscurity, in that only a small group of people knew about the address. But of course, from the AI's point of view, it didn't care about that. It's just going to go and look at absolutely everything it can attach to. And all of a sudden, these subwebs that people thought were relatively safe and secure became instantly available through just asking a simple question of the AI. So these are things that it's got unexpected side effects of these kind of views of what access do you have to what data and where is the data located.
I'm just going to go to our own intranet and quickly delete a few things before we move on, I think, just to be safe.
Exactly.
Elliot, what about considerations in terms of issues? Obviously, multi-cloud, it's not a new concept, but then what are the issues that clients are coming to you? You've mentioned that intranet case there, but what are the issues they're coming to you and saying, you know, we need to sort this because we want to use, you know, a multi-cloud environment? How do you kind of set them up for long-term success?
There are various techniques you can take for that. One of the considerations is, what's the trade-off between how much work you want to do to refactor your existing setup and your existing data versus the time to value to actually get something out of your new generative AI solution? Some companies start by saying, well, we need to fix our data or change our metadata or have better master data management. And my general opinion on that is that, you know, if companies have been working on that for many years or even a decade and they still haven't fixed their data issues, then is that realistically going to get done in the next 6 months so that you can use generative AI? Probably not. So I think the solution to think about there is that, unlike machine learning, generative AI is incredibly tolerant of imprecise data or data that may not be perfect. So I'd say start off by implementing the large language model platform in the most appropriate place, whether it's on-premise or in a public cloud, and then start to see what your users will do with that. And that's like the kind of tier zero approach, is just giving them access to that kind of capability. Now, afterwards, you might say, well, I want to obviously optimize my infrastructure so that I can take in new data sets or join them together in a particular way. And in the old days, we would look at things like a data warehouse, or we would look at a data lake for lots of unstructured data and just slam all that data in there and then work out what to do with it. Well, nowadays, companies are looking at the newer version of that, which is the data lakehouse approach. And, you know, with the data lakehouse, as soon as you put the data on there, it's immediately converted to a format or a capability where you can query it at the same time as you're loading it, but you can also make it available directly to any large language model that might need to take advantage of that. And this is quite interesting, because you could say, I'll have the large language model on premise, but the index that reads from the data lakehouse in Azure. Or you might say, I'll deploy an Azure Stack node to a partner's location, and that can host the index, and that be in a different place to where the data is. So we've always got this flexibility on how to implement these things. But the design patterns for generative AI, I think, are going to have to keep up with the modern trends and the new announcements in this kind of technology.
Has it been tough adapting that approach in the last 12 months, given generative AI has come along? Because obviously, you know, you're still trying to figure things out, and then bam, this thing comes in the way and gets, you know, makes all the headlines, and customers clearly want it, but, you know, they want to take things back and step. What do you say?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And in fact, it's funny you should say that, because we had some CIO who came in a few weeks to one of our executive briefing centers and basically said, look, I've just spent the last 2 years tuning my multi-cloud approach until it's in a state that I'm really happy with. And then the business came along and said, well, where's generative AI? We want to use generative AI. And that is a real consideration now, is that you spent all this time architecting for one thing, and suddenly just this huge new requirement just came out of nowhere. I think the surprising thing for us, looking out at how our customers are using AI, is that somehow the businesses, when they saw the potential of this kind of technology, new budget emerged from functional departments, as opposed to just going to the CIO and saying, can you pay for this? And so that was an interesting finding from us, which was that you have a typical kind of budget for IT and operations and constructing things like, I don't know, data protection, backup, storage, et cetera, et cetera. And now there's suddenly this additional pot of capability where the business units are saying, you must consume this because we need benefit from generative AI in the next few months.
Would not want to be in those client meetings, because imagine then they've just been told one thing, they need this, and then you're like, well, you've got to, you know, actually take the test steps. And one of those steps is around bias and, you know, fairness, transparency, responsibility. Right. They've got to do this, you know, fairly carefully. What are you talking to clients about when it comes to taking a multi-cloud approach to AI whilst adhering to those important tenets?
Well, yeah, that's a very real consideration, because, I mean, if you're using a public service, something similar to ChatGPT, then considerations like bias are not easily under your control or explainability. You know, it's not like you can say to them, oh, well, I want to change these parameters of the model, or, you know, I want to inspect the data you use to train this. No, you don't have access to that. So there's some kind of trade-off in terms of how you consume these things versus what else you can do with those kind of models. But if you're using a cloud large language model as a kind of endpoint, but you're writing your own Python, or you're creating a LangChain solution or something like that, you can actually intercept the responses from the cloud and take some action based on the contents of that response. So you might say, for example, I'm actually going to do some drift monitoring to say, am I actually still receiving the kind of questions or the input that I expected when we set up this model? Or you might do some bias that says, bias detection that says, you know, I've recorded 100% of all of the outputs in the last 24 hours, and all of a sudden I've noticed that there's a certain bias towards some kind of protected characteristic, like a person's gender or their race or something like that. So in those kind of models, because you've deliberately taken a multi-cloud by design approach, you have the ability to intercept those and decide what you want to do with them. There are some other interesting use cases. So you might say, I want to deploy Falcon. You know, Falcon as a model, there are various different flavors of it, there are different sizes, but essentially you can download the Falcon model from Hugging Face or wherever and install it on a Dell server and get running by the end of the day. Now, in that particular case, that's quite interesting from a point of view of bias and observability, because the people that created Falcon actually released a good chunk of the data that they trained the model on. So if somebody comes back to you and says, well, you know, what was this model trained on, and why potentially is it coming out with certain responses? You can say, well, here's a sample of the model it was trained on. Or you might say, you know, Meta has created Llama 2. So is there a version of that which is optimized for NVIDIA, which you could deploy, and then you could then deploy NVIDIA's software that looks at things like guardrails or can intercept as a proxy these kind of responses before sending it back to the user and say, I'm going to take some decision, like maybe I'll have a content filter on it or something like that. So I think this whole multi-cloud by design approach really comes into its own when you start thinking about these kind of concepts that you mentioned, like bias or transparency, that kind of thing.
So what are other regulatory concerns? I know that's really boring to be talking about, but it's important because you're, you know, applying it across multiple environments in business environments. What are you telling customers in terms of maintaining regulatory approaches on this?
Well, exactly. If we had had this podcast a few months ago, I would have said that AI is way ahead of any regulations. However, just last at the end of last year, we had the AI Safety Summit, and it's incredible to see people from so many different parts of the world all in one place together that seem to be agreeing on the fact that regulation is required, particularly looking at things like frontier AI, where you may have developed something which is perfectly acceptable from an academic or a research point of view because you're trying to understand the technology, but you absolutely would not give those just to the wider public or to organizations in general because they could be misused in some way. We then had in December, we had the European Parliament came out with a proposed new regulation. I'm not sure if it's actually been implemented yet, but in that regulation, they actually published a list of banned applications, which means that you actually will be breaking that law once it's implemented if you use generative AI to implement things like emotion recognition in a workplace or in a school, or if the AI is thought to be manipulating human behavior to circumvent their free will. You know, this is the kind of thing which is actually in the legislation, or if it's exploiting vulnerable people. And they went as far as to say that some systems that are going to be built should be flagged as high-risk systems, especially if they're to do with certain aspects of banking or insurance or voting or things like that. And these are things which could impact people's rights. So you see this kind of the nature of the relationship between computers and humans is changing. Previously, computers were just doing rudimentary things that instructed by humans, and now it's actually changing to say, hold on a sec, is it possible for a computer to impact somebody's rights? And the fines for that are pretty significant. I mean, they're proposing something like 35 million euros fine, 7% of global turnover. I mean, those numbers are even bigger than GDPR. So obviously these kind of considerations are very real.
And you've got to balance that with clients coming in going, we need generative AI now because of XYZ, and yeah, you know, telling them to hold back a bit is important to meet those demands, I guess, as well.
Yeah, I think they probably don't need to pause the development, but I do think they have to have reasonable oversight, and we need to think exactly how they're going to use it. I mean, we want to be responsible in terms of the capabilities that you give to organizations.
So Elliot, looking ahead, what excites you around AI and multi-cloud, you know, what prospects are you most kind of looking forward to in terms of seeing how this could help, you know, accelerate development or applications?
Well, I'm in a pretty fortunate position because I get to see all the latest and greatest technology before a lot of other people. And I mean, generative AI is absolutely mind-boggling. Some of the proof of concepts and demos we've done for our own customers even made me stop in my tracks and think, well, number one, how could you build that so quickly? And number two, the reaction we get from customers is, I didn't know you could do that with a computer. Mm-hmm. So I love seeing that kind of thing, actual real world examples of people using these kind of things. One of the things that really stands out for me is when multiple AIs are working together as a team. You will have seen, I guess, solutions like AutoGen from Microsoft, things like ChatGPT with OpenAI implemented functions and plugins. So when the AI gets to a certain state, it realizes it has this capability where it can make a call outside to go and look up like today's weather, or maybe look up a CRM record from your database, or basically anything that a piece of software can do. And seeing multiple AIs kind of interact with each other and then come to a consensus and pick up that answer and give that answer back to the human who asked the question. You know, from the human's point of view, it looks like I just asked one question to one AI and I got one response back. But actually what happened under the covers was maybe 50 different AIs had a kind of conference in the space of 2 seconds, worked out what code they needed to write, spun up an instance, took some action, did some analysis, reached out to some websites, came back, gave you the answer. Oh, and by the way, it also created an image that represents something to do with that answer as well. You know, those kind of capabilities are absolutely amazing to see. So this is the kind of thing that I'm looking forward to seeing in the future, because you can take these different components and build them across multi-cloud solutions. I mean, that little function that did the call out into your CRM database, that function was running on-premise. You know, the large language model, that could have been in the public cloud. So you've got this whole concept of, you know, how AI is embedded into products and then how you're picking the right part of the multi-cloud solution to host it.
And finally, Elliot, what can we expect from you guys at Dell in terms of multi-cloud AI for the rest of the year? Is there something we could get a heads up on, or looking ahead, or just is it just a case of watch this space, watch to come?
Well, Dell is all about choice, and we like to give multiple different ways to achieve similar outcomes and let the customer choose what's the most appropriate for them. So you'll see we obviously have a really close partnership with NVIDIA and the new chips which are coming out. But in the same way, we have a really close relationship with Intel and AMD. So you see the new MI cards that have come out from AMD recently, and this gives you fantastic access to even more GPU memory, which you might need if you're deploying the biggest models with the most parameters. Intel got the new Gaudi range coming out. So we're working hard to make sure that if you're looking to host a particular technical solution, that you can always get the right infrastructure that's the right match for that solution from Dell.
Awesome. Elliot, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful, well, we're recording this early in the year, so have a wonderful rest of the year. I'm sure hopefully we'll get a chance to speak before the end of the year. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.